welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses, where I usually talk to Catholics on social media, but I'm departing from that type of format on this program and decided to talk with change makers and change agents in the community who are doing powerful things and highlighting some of the work that they do. So on this particular episode, I got Gary Taylor, who's a licensed clinical social worker who's doing great things in his practice as a therapist. And if I'm not mistaken, you work in like academia too, right? Like you're a professor?
Yes, as a professor at Virginia State University.
Right. Okay, cool. So I'm super pumped to have him on and share some of his experiences as a therapist, insights, and also highlight some of the projects that he's working on, and also blow up some of his exciting news that he just recently got with his doctorate in social work program. So major congrats on that, and we're going to touch on that in later on in the program. So the first question is something I've always wondered. And as you are like a Black male clinical therapist, what do you think are some of the unique barriers to African Americans and mental health that you've seen or read about that you observe?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me again on your platform. And we've touched base a couple times on Twitter and stuff like that. So I appreciate your support on everything that I do and support everything you're doing as well, brother. You're doing a lot of great stuff. I see what you're talking about and what you're putting forth the effort. So keep up the good fight. As a therapist, man, you know, one of the things, well, let me say this. I'm a former therapist now. I shut my practice down the end of September. And that was because just I had so much going on, and I was, you know, teaching full time at Virginia State University's their social work master's program. I was doing speaking, I was consulting, and also personal stuff, right? I got two kids, wife, church activities. I'm a deacon at my church. I'm a young adult leader at my church. And so like, I think 7 days a week I'm doing something, right? Or decision making, or somebody's hitting me about something. And so I decided to let my practice go after about 3 years in private practice, 1.5 years of full-time private practice, self-employed, the other been part-time. And that was for me to kind of practice what I preach and practice what I tell clients, like self-care is key. And like, I was like, if I'm gonna practice good sound self-care and be, you know, 100% committed to the work, I gotta practice what I preach too as well. And then I knew that this fall was gonna be super busy and hectic. So I didn't wanna put my clients on the back burner, you know? But when I've been working with them, and I share this with my information, my research going forward, that, you know, I think a lot of times we have said that Black men or Black folks don't go to therapy, but they do, right? And they're super consistent in therapy. Sometimes, you know, every once in a while I have my clients that don't show up or no show or cancel or whatever. But, you know, my time in therapy, I probably average between an 81% to like 87% show rate. And I work with African-American men and women specifically, mostly, as my clients, and they showed up. So I think that the narrative that we don't go to therapy is false. I think that this is something that has happened in the past, but as we've grown now, you know, people are going to therapy, but you got to provide a safe space. Black or, you know, any other ethnicity, you got to provide a safe space for that Black person to be heard and be vulnerable. And if not, then they're probably going to back away. I do also have seen a lot of just education, like, so a lot of psychoeducation around what stress is, what it feels like, what it looks like, defining some of the terminology out there that people are using or misusing, like narcissism or trauma, you know, trauma bonding. What's the other one? Gaslighting, you know, all that stuff, like things. So I've been trying to educate folks on that, but then also, a lot of times, you know, Black people in mental health, they don't know how much stress is affecting them. And they also are not aware of how it's affecting their body. So I do a lot of mind-body connection and helping them on that. Also, people not aware of their insurance benefits, right? So doing a lot of education around, you know, what your insurance offers, what it covers, what it doesn't cover. And if it doesn't cover this, you need to go back to open enrollment and tell them to cover this. That's mostly in the community work that I do. But, you know, of course, when we start therapy in the first session, I always go over what that benefits look like for them. Mind body, I said that. And then also looking at how the mental affects the physical, right? So really doing a lot of work with them on understanding, like, okay, you got to take care of yourself physically, but also mentally. They work on, you know, both hand in hand. And every once in a while, some of my spiritual folks, they'll get in there, we'll talk about, you know, spirituality and that and how that affects us as well in that. And so, and lastly, being aware of the resources that's around you or close to you in your area, right? So when I do community conversations or talk with, you know, therapists, some say like they don't know what's around them, right? They don't know what's there to tap in with. And so when I'm doing therapy, I was doing therapy, but I was also doing a lot of psychoeducation. I was doing a lot of resource management. So people know me as the mental health guy in my county or my area. I'm in a small county here in Virginia. That everybody know everybody or related to somebody, you know what I'm saying? Like that, you know, me and my wife's family are super huge, but you know, people don't know where to go, but they know I do mental health. So they was like, hey, you know, my nickname is Trey. So they're like, yo, Trey, you know anybody that, you know, do this, you know anybody do that? And so just point people in the right direction, because I've built up a little, you know, network of therapists or mental health professionals, and point them in the right direction. So there's just a lot of awareness, psychoeducation, really, really understanding like that mind-body connection, noticing how stress affects us mentally, physically, and spiritually, insurance information, and also debunking that we do go to therapy and are consistent.
And yeah, that's good. That's good that you are like actively involved in the community with like education, educating people on like benefits, and also meeting people where they are with various resources and tools to help them understand how to navigate the mental health arena, I guess, so to speak.
Yep.
So my next question really has to deal with the book you published called Refresh: The Journey to Find Peace. So in the name of the title, it kind of sounds like you had to go through a lot of like self-awareness, a lot of introspection, a lot of like self-evaluation in order for you to arrive at this point in your life where you are in like a place of like healing and like harmony. So I'm wondering, like, what were some of the like the life experiences or what was the journey like for you to help create that book?
Yeah, man. It was, writing that book was amazing. Shout out to my co-author, Saint Yvonne. He helped co-write that book for me. And, you know, it even in the things that I thought I had probably healed or, you know, I thought I dealt with, when we was doing those sessions to write the book, man, some old things still popped up and I was like, oh shoot, I still got some stuff I'm dealing with. But this is my second, my third book. And I wanted to create something that was a self-help memoir that gave personal accounts, but also had some psychoeducation again in there, and then also some, you know, some clinical stuff, but wasn't too heavy on the clinical, because people do relate a little bit better when they know that you're human too, right? And so, I was apprehensive on sharing some of the things, you know, in it, but I felt like, you know, we see all these self-help books from people that are non-mental health professionals, not in the field, but talking about their own mental health journey. And I was like, man, you don't see a lot of, you know, us as mental health professionals talking about our journey. And I think that would be a good blend to, hey, I'm going to share what I've been through personally, right? And then I'm going to also share what I know clinically. And also from a psychoeducation standpoint, I'm going to put it all in one, right? And it really stomped, came out of the this place of grief and loss. And it wasn't supposed to be mostly about grief and loss, but it touched on grief and loss in multiple arenas, right? So we know grief and loss is not just relegated to death and losing of loved ones, but you can be grieving loss to, you know, opportunity at work, you know what I'm saying, different things and goals you want to achieve, friends, things like that. So I talked about it. Initially, the heaviest part of the book is probably the grief and loss of losing loved ones for a 5-year period, right? From 2015 to 2020 with me and my wife, we lost loved ones from that whole entire period to entire 5 year period, where it was grandparents, uncles, aunts, you know, things like that. And probably the worst, toughest year for me was 2018, where I lost both my grandmothers at the same year, one in August and one in December. And really just my first time as an adult dealing with grief as a clinician. And really, and I always had a like kind of a fear of working with grief prior to that. But dealing with grief and loss as a clinician, working in the same hospitals that my grandmothers died in, and then also navigating what it's like to lose two loved ones at the same time. And personally, as a dad, as a husband, still navigating that, trying to show up for my parents and my family. And so once I got through all of that and started going to therapy in 2019, because I lost an uncle and just was really just shut off a little bit, I decided to write this book. And I just went into all the stuff that I've grieved over basketball career, right? Like I probably wasn't going nowhere, but I had hopes and dreams, right? And then they got shattered in a sense. I talked about how that built the kind of the hustler mentality that I have now, or the kind of just, you know, I'm doing everything all at once, made me who I am, but also was like one of those things where I was like playing pickup games and getting mad and critiquing myself for no reason of a pickup game after, you know, had no merit to it, right? And saying like how that chip on my shoulder was there from ninth grade all the way to my 30s and dealing with that. And then also like, you know, knowing that I probably should have went to therapy a long time ago when my parents divorced when I was an undergraduate, but never processing, never talking with anybody about it, and waiting until I become a parent of my own and a husband of my own, where I was projecting, right, onto my family, that they, you know, with my daughter and my wife, and just couldn't really, you know, figure out why. And then one day, you know, I was like, you know what, it just hit me. It's like, yo, you gotta go talk to somebody. And I really wanted to go talk to somebody because I didn't want to start my private practice without doing therapy first, because then I would have to say, you know, I've done therapy, I'm in therapy, but I also can work on, excuse me, some of the stuff that I needed to work on that was overdue. And so so I talk about a lot about that, grief and loss on different elements. There's some elements about, you know, thoughts about wanting, you know, suicide and dying, things like that, but it's not too in-depth. But and then also faith, right? My faith in God and how that's been challenged, and how my bishop and my church family shows up in my life these last 10 to 15 years. And so I just incorporated all of that. And I incorporated everything that makes me who I am. So you'll see like scriptures in there. You'll see different topics in there that relates to my family, right? And then all the people that are all my loved ones and my relationships with them. You'll see hip hop lyrics in there, right? That defined who I was at that moment, right? So you might see a hip hop lyric next to a scripture, but that's what I was dealing with in that moment, right? And just kind of learning, like, you know, these things were, I was trying to survive, you know? And so I talk about school too. I talk about like undergraduate and, you know, working 9 to 5 while trying to finish school, and then working full time trying to finish my master's degree, and why I was overworking versus, you know, not dealing with the stuff I was dealing with. So yeah, man, it's I think it's a good book. I've heard great reviews from it, you know, not just because I wrote it and helped write it, but people have told me, like, you know, it's been helpful because they can relate, but they didn't know, right? And then it kind of normalizes. That's the other piece I wanted to do, was let's normalize all the stuff that we really go to and talk about every single day, but don't address unless it gets to a crisis level. Like, because we all go through these different stresses. We just chalk it up to being everyday stuff, but it is everyday stuff, but it affects us differently. And that's how it moves us. And so it's really, I mean, some of it may be traumatic, but I don't think it's trauma-based at all, but I am sensitive to that, so I put disclaimers in there. But yeah, like, let's talk about why grief is so heavy. Let's talk about how not making a JV basketball team or being coached a certain way can affect you going forward. Let's talk about that. You know what I'm saying? You might not be the greatest basketball player or the greatest player in your county, but, you know, that affected me, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's it's talking about the normal everything thing that we don't really kind of process go through.
Yeah, for sure. And I wonder if you could touch a little bit on like the cover of the book. So when I see the cover of the book, it's like the white, it's like white and black. It's a house on the side in the background, and it's like you like doing the ultimate weight of the world is on your shoulders, sigh. And so
Yeah.
the house is like very reminiscent of the Eminem Marshall Mathers album. And I just think so much like adverse. I just think when I look at it and like I connect with it because it reminds me of like a lot of like adverse child experiences that I had. And you just positioned there with like this like weight of the world, extra big side out sitting in this chair. I can definitely relate to that. And like I can see like, yeah, let's bring to the forefront these things that we've, you know, managed to suppress for like countless years,
Yeah.
and let's bring them up so that we can like be free from this bondage that we hold. So yeah, talk a little about the cover.
Oh man, that's thank you for that review of the cover, man, because I haven't heard that. I didn't think about the Marshall Mathers, you know, piece on that, man. But it's interesting because I'm very, 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 you know, you follow me, what I do. I'm very, very intentional about what stuff I put out creative wise. And so we wanted to do a hardback book cover because my first book was paperback. So I was like, and even in the paperback for You Good Fam, like I dealt with the same graphic designer that I did for this one. And I told him what I wanted to encapsulate on that, right? Because I was like, okay, I want people to see this book. I want them to feel it, right? I want them to feel something when they see it and say, you know what? I need to look at this up and pick this up, like you just said, right? And so I'm blessed to have a graphic designer that I grew up with. And we from the same area. We know got the same our families know each other, and I don't have to speak too much on what I want. I let him kind of freestyle it, and that's my guy Chris Lewis, man. He's amazing. But that house, if you read the book, the house that I'm sitting in front of is my great grandparents' house, and that is connect. That's close to my mom's house, and we got like a whole family thing, and it's run down because it's been there forever. It hasn't been, you know, dealt with enough like that. So and at the time when we took that picture, my mans took this picture years ago, maybe like 2019. I want to say I was 32 or 33 for my birthday. I did a photo shoot for my birthday, 32 or 33. He took this picture, and at this point in time I was getting back to my old self. I was coming out of the all the deaths and everything, and I was trying to find myself again and really getting back to myself. I love sneakers, I love clothes, getting back to that element of myself, but really finding myself again. And he took that picture, bro, and he has a way of taking pictures sometimes that captures moments and times. And he shot that one, and it's actually that picture is in color. I need to post it, but in color it tells a different story. But when you put it in black and white, it kind of just makes it just a whole different piece. And he took that picture, and I was like, bro, this is an amazing picture. And I just held it for like the few years. And so it's me sitting there, and I really wasn't stressed at that point. I really wasn't. I was in a good place, but I was just, you know, putting my head down, like just, you know, gathering my thoughts, getting myself together. And he caught that moment. And I said, man, that is the perfect picture for this book. And then my graphic designer, man, he took that jump, man. He made it black and white, and he put the words on it. And I told him what color schemes I wanted to do because we're trying to tell a story, right? We're trying to go from one place to another and get this action verb going back, right? Refreshing is kind of, you know, rejuvenating, but also, you know, taking one thing that you already did, refreshing it, the same thing, and just is redoing it again, right? And getting back to it. And that cover, that's how that cover came about, man. He did an amazing job. It's some words in it. It's little rips that you can see in it. That's my graphic designer, man. I tell all therapists, mental health professionals who got brands of business, man, get you a good graphic designer because they'll tell a better story than you can tell sometimes. So I love that cover. I do. I love that cover, man. I love everything about that book and cover and everything to it, man. He did a great job on it.
Yeah, as a photographer, for many, many years, I've been a photographer. The image always says more than Like we always say, a picture is worth a thousand words. So
Right.
definitely that image inspires like a lot of emotion and evokes like a lot of stress and anxiety. And so even if it's not what you intended it to be, it still relays that, and it's a powerful image. So yeah, I really love that.
Appreciate it.
So let's go on to the next question. So some time ago, I remember seeing on Twitter that you and like a group of other therapists, social workers, created this initiative called the Brothers in Social Work Collective.
Right.
So how did that come into being? Like, what are some of the transformative things that you've been able to accomplish?
Yeah, man. That's my guys, man. Shout out to Dr. James Bell. He's out in Michigan, and my guy Chris Scott out in Portland. After the pandemic, man, we connected, right? Via social work Twitter. That's kind of how we connected, via Twitter and just that boom of networking. And so we've never officially met in person yet. Dr. Bell and Chris have at a conference, but I have not had a chance to get all of us connected together in one just yet. We're gonna make that, hopefully gonna make that change next year. But man, we had connected, we got into a group chat, man, after the pandemic, man, just really found out that we had similar interests, right? And we were both dads, you know what I'm saying? We, both all of us are married. We into sneakers, we into creativity, we all do podcasting. We all do a lot of social justice, racial justice, equity work, and we're at different levels of social work. So I was LCSW, Dr. Bell, of course, is DSW, and then Chris is school social work. So you had this approach and experience from three black men in social work, and of course, there's not a lot of black male social workers out there. And I was like, you're not going to find our area of expertise and experience nowhere with that, And so I think it was one November, man. What's this, 2023? Had to be 2021. We were sitting here around this time, and we was like, we had, applied. Everybody was doing individual stuff, like applying for proposals for conferences, something like that, or we had came off a conference, and I said, bro, I was like, yo, we all doing the same thing. I'm a big collective person, right? Let's just do it together. We both want to go tap in with the universities. We all want to do equity and racial justice, social justice work, because Dr. Bell is heavy on equity. And I was doing community social justice type stuff, and Chris does the school, but also community-based work and the jails and stuff like that. So, man, why don't we just put a collective together, all of us, and pitch ourselves to the universities? And I promise you, once we decided to do that, we put it out there, and we got, like, within 2 weeks, we got one call from a university coming for us to do guest lecture. I was like, oh, snap. Right. And so then it started to evolve into social justice work, right? Racial justice, racial equity. So we do a lot of conversations around implicit bias for social work. Equity-based and inclusion for companies or universities, and then we do a lot of stuff around student engagement. So then we'll go to, like, we worked at university last year before last, working with their students of social work in the master's program and the PhD program, I believe, and their BSW program, to create a roundtable discussion every Saturday around, like, how they was managing going through the program, their stressors, things like that. It was for black men, Latino, brown men, everybody that was involved. We did that. And we did a bunch of trainings in different universities around, like, navigating the white spaces in social work, right? Implicit bias for social workers, things like that. And then also we started doing stuff around, like, how do you create a digital voice as a social worker? Like, because we all podcast. And so, and we do that. So we've been doing that, man, for the last few years, man. And now we want to hopefully take it to the national level with the NASW. Hopefully we can do CSWE, which I just came from, and just keep pushing it, because there's space. And so I enjoy that collective, because we all got the same mission, and we're not tripping about, what I'm saying, who's doing this, who's doing that. It's just a collective effort. So we also use each other's content. You know what I'm saying? So we have our own separate content, but it's just a big pool of content. And we just pull, or we combine and come together, you know, to help each other out. And so it's a good space. And these are guys that I haven't met personally, but have grown to be my brothers over the last years over the pandemic, man. And this just kind of, you know, it's the power of social media, you know what I'm saying? And connecting like that. So shout out to them boys, man, Brothers and Social Work Collective.
That's good, man. The power of brotherhood and fellowship through social media. And it's a much needed, you know, platform for you guys as Black men or as Black people, amplifying our topics, our issues of concern at a white dominated institution or white dominated systems. But it's even more powerful for, you know, Black men who are in this profession to amplify and elevate, you know, our unique issues as Black men. Definitely thank you for that. Yeah. So my last little real question before we go off into like a not so serious question is, last week you mentioned that you got accepted into the DSW program at University of Kentucky. Right. So how do you continue, or how do you want to continue the work that you've been doing with obtaining the DSW? Cause that's a major step right there.
Yeah, man. I have been flirting with a doctorate for years, man. You know, it ramped back up again when I got to Virginia State, cause I'm around nothing but doctorates, you know what I'm saying? Or PhDs. And it was, you know, you get that and get inspired again. And, you know, I said, you know, well, I closed the practice and I was trying to figure out, and I was like, oh, I got a nice little space in academia. This is dope. I love teaching MSW students. I love just giving my knowledge away for them and helping them, you know, advance, man. I just like putting the students in position to succeed, you know what I'm saying? And so I said, okay, we know that, right? And then I was still doing my speaking stuff, consulting work. And I was like, okay, that's still moving. And it felt like I was still busier when I closed the practice than when I had the practice open. I said there's still some more things that I want to get done in social work. I'm a big policy person. I wanted to do policy for so long, but I never could get tapped into this space. And so I said, you know, well, the DSW will allow for me to manage getting into that space at a federal state policy level. Of course, we do it at the academic level too, but I want to enhance how we look at mental health of Black people and Black men, right? And there's still so much research. There's still so much gap in that area, right? And so I felt like the DSW will help expand upon that. They got a suicide prevention lab, research lab there. They got a self-care research lab there. So, you know, utilizing that and kind of seeing how we can, you know, put in the gaps and meet in the gaps to help enhance that. It's pretty much just going to enhance everything I've been doing at a higher level. And that's all I want to do is do it at the highest level possible. And I also felt like, you know, this is one thing I said, like, if I didn't get it, what would have happened, right? If I got down, got old and said, okay, but what would have happened? How much further would you have elevated if you hadn't got it versus if you got it? So I just wanted to maximize social work to the highest level to see where it could take me. And then I can kind of bow out of social work and say, all right, I maximized it. I tried the best I could. I did and implemented everything I wanted to implement, or at least influence. Here's a baton. Take it. I'm going to run my coffee shop and just mess with cars for the rest of my retirement. So, yeah, man. So I'm super excited for what I started in the summertime. And we'll see where it takes me.
Yeah, and it's good that you have intentions to want to work with macro level social work. Always a much needed area to influence social policy and at the state, federal, or local level. So good come up right there, and many blessings to you in that endeavor.
Yes, sir.
So my last little question that I want to ask is, do you consider yourself optimist or pessimist or realist? And why? What's your brief answer to that?
Optimist is the sure thing. I've grown to be a realist at times, but I think that comes with parenting and being a husband. I'm still a dreamer, a visionator. I'm still a visionary, but I can be pessimistic at times. But I realized that I'm more pessimistic when I'm not taking care of myself, right? And I'm not practicing good sound self-care, that I'm more pessimistic. And I just really realized that over the last year or two, where, you know, the way I was speaking over myself, like self-employment, being self-employed and running your own business will run you through the ringer, and it will expose some things about yourself. Like, there's not a lot of room for pessimism in self-employment. It's just not. You got to go. You got to be real about it, or you got to be optimistic about it. And so, you know, and having to address that. And some of that is just kind of just, you know, sayings we say, man, over time that we picked up over our family members or friends. Like, you know, it's always something, or, you know, this got to be something, you know. And that's really pessimistic, you know what I'm saying, at times. And it's like, yo, can we change our language around that? And once I started changing my language and approaching and changing my attitude towards things, not negating a bad day, not negating, like, it's tough, but just being optimistic. Like, okay, well, the sun got to go down today, and it got to rise again tomorrow, you know, and really increasing my faith in God around that is like, you know, when it's going to happen, it's going to happen for you when the time is right. You know what I'm saying? It might not be on your time, and then working on that patience piece. So I know when the pessimism slips in, it's because I'm not taking care of myself. But, you know, that's been a journey too, kind of figure, you know, really unlearning some of those thinking styles and sayings and challenging it. And once I started challenging, I got back to my old self, you know, and I'm happy to be back at this old tray, you know, that wasn't so, you know, rigid and then just like really just negative about stuff at times. So yeah.
Sage wisdom right there on how you jump from this one to this one to this one, but you found through like self-discovery that you know yourself well and know when you're not in like lockstep with how you should be. So that's good to know. And that's really good wisdom to share with the audience. Well, I really appreciated getting to know like the ins and outs of like your professional life and your intentions with your DSW. And I can only pray that your future like adventures continue to be like abundant with many blessings. So man, good luck to you with all these things that you do.
Yeah, man. I thank you, man. Thank you for support. And like I said, you know, continue blessings and everything that you do and all your endeavors as well, brother. If anything I can do to help out or support, you know where I'm at, let me know.
yeah, for sure, man. And you guys, listeners, continue to keep Gary in your thoughts and prayers for the work that he does in the community. And you guys can tune in to the next episode of Saintly Witnesses.